All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really going to get into it with a case that I think a lot of our listeners will find both fascinating and a little bit unsettling, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely highlights some potential pitfalls in the world of employment law.
Absolutely. It's Munoz v. Kaiser Steel Corporation.
Oh, yeah. Munoz, a classic case. Right?
It is. It's a classic for a reason. It gets right to the heart of how verbal promises, those handshake agreements we often rely on, can sometimes run smack into a brick wall when it comes to the strict letter of the law.
Yeah, and especially in employment situations. You know, you think you have a solid understanding, a commitment from an employer, you make big life changes based on that, and then boom, things fall apart.
Exactly. It's a cautionary tale, really, for anyone entering the legal profession, anyone navigating the job market. And we've got some fantastic source material today that really dissects this case, breaks down the legal principles at play.
For sure. We're going to be diving into the statute of frauds, estoppel, fraud claims, all those nuances that can make or break a case like this.
And those are concepts, let's be honest, that can be a little dense and intimidating, even for those of us who've been around the legal block a few times.
Right, but they're so crucial to understanding how these disputes play out. So our mission today is to untangle those concepts, make them clear and relatable, and really see what they mean for the enforceability of verbal promises in the context of employment. Because that's what this boils down to, right? Can you hold someone to their word even if it wasn't put in writing?
Exactly. And Munoz offers a really compelling case study to explore that question. So let's set the stage. We have Anthony Munoz, unemployed at the time, living in Texas, and he interviews for a position with Kaiser Steel, which is in California.
Right. And during this interview process, he's given a verbal assurance. They tell him 3 years of training.
Okay, 3 years of training. Now, Munoz understandably interprets this as essentially a three-year job guarantee. I mean, especially when you're unemployed, that kind of time frame, it implies a certain level of commitment, a sense of security.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a reasonable assumption to make in that situation.
It is. And so based on this promise, this understanding, Munoz makes some pretty significant life changes. He sells his home in Texas.
Right. Uproots his life, moves all the way to California.
And he even buys a new home there. I mean, he's going all in on this opportunity.
Yeah, he's making major decisions based on this belief that he has a three-year commitment from Kaiser Steel.
And then, just 6 months in,
boom, employment terminated.
Just like that. 6 months into what he believed was a three-year deal, he's out of a job. So the immediate question becomes, can he hold Kaiser to that initial verbal promise? Is a spoken commitment like that, without anything in writing, actually enforceable in a court of law?
And that's where things get legally interesting, let's say.
They do. Because, as many of our legally minded listeners will probably recognize, a three-year promise of anything, let alone employment, immediately raises red flags when it comes to the statute of frauds.
Right off the bat, that's a fundamental legal concept in California, and really in most jurisdictions. And essentially, it says certain types of agreements, especially those that can't be performed within 1 year, need to be in writing to be enforceable.
So a three-year job guarantee, that obviously blows past that one-year mark.
It does. And the idea behind the statute of frauds, it's really about preventing fraud, right? Making sure there's clear evidence of an agreement, especially when it comes to longer term commitments. Memories fade, stories change. So having something in writing protects everyone involved.
It's like that old saying, get it in writing.
Exactly. So the lack of a written contract in Munoz's case, that's the first major obstacle he faces. The statute of frauds looms large.
It does. But even without a written agreement, are there ever situations where a verbal promise might still hold up in court?
Well, that's where the concept of estoppel comes in. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's essentially a legal doctrine that can act as an exception to that strict requirement of a written contract under the statute of frauds.
So it's like the law recognizing that sometimes sticking rigidly to the rules can actually lead to an unfair outcome.
Yeah, exactly. Promissory estoppel, that's the specific type we're talking about here, it's rooted in the idea of fairness. It's saying, look, even if there's no writing, if someone relied on a promise to their detriment and the other party knew they were relying on it, it might be unjust to let them just back out of that promise.
So in Munoz's case, the court had to consider whether Kaiser should be estopped, legally prevented, from using the statute of frauds as a shield.
Right. And to decide that, they looked at two main things. One, did Muno suffer what's called an unconscionable injury because he relied on Kaiser's promise?
Okay, so that means did he experience a level of harm, a level of loss that was just so egregious, so unfair, that it would be unconscionable to let Kaiser off the hook?
Yeah, that's the idea. And two, would Kaiser be unjustly enriched if they were allowed to just break that promise without any consequences?
So did they gain something? Did they benefit in some unfair way by going back on their word?
Right. Those are the two big questions. And when it came to unconscionable injury, you know, on the surface, it seems like Munoz had a pretty strong case. He sold his house, moved across the country, bought a new home, all based on this job promise.
And he was unemployed when he received the offer. So this job represented a real lifeline for him.
Absolutely. But here's the catch, and this is where the legal analysis gets really specific. The court focused on the fact that Munoz was, in fact, unemployed when he accepted the job. They said, look, his actions, selling his home, moving, those were steps he took in pursuit of any employment opportunity. They didn't see it as a specific detriment caused by leaving a secure job at Kaiser's urging.
So if he had, for example, left a really great job, a stable, well-paying position, based solely on Kaiser's promise, then the argument for unconscionable injury would have been much stronger.
Much stronger, yeah. Because then you could say he gave up something concrete, something valuable, in direct reliance on Kaiser's commitment. But in this case, the court essentially said, well, he was already looking for work. Those were choices he made as part of that job search.
So the context of his prior employment status really mattered in how the court viewed his actions.
It did. And then when it came to the second part, that unjust enrichment question, the court again sided with Kaiser. Their reasoning was, while Kaiser paid Munoz for the work he did during those 6 months, he wasn't working for free. They didn't see any evidence that Kaiser got some sort of unfair advantage or benefit that they didn't pay for.
So, because he was compensated for the time he worked, even though it was far short of the promised 3 years, they didn't see it as unjust enrichment in a legal sense.
Yeah.
It seems like the bar for using estoppel to get around that written contract requirement is pretty high.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's intentional. The statute of frauds is there for a reason, and courts are very careful about making exceptions.
Okay, so the oral contract itself is likely unenforceable because of the statute of frauds, and estoppel doesn't seem to offer a way around it in this specific situation. But Munoz also made another argument, right? He claimed that Kaiser committed fraud by making this promise, knowing they had no intention of actually keeping it for 3 years.
Yeah, that's a common argument in these types of cases, and it's understandable. If you feel like someone made a promise just to get you to do something and they never intended to follow through, it feels like you've been tricked, deceived.
Absolutely. So why couldn't Munoz pursue a fraud claim in this instance?
Well, because to prove fraud in this context, you need to show more than just that the promise was broken. You have to prove that Kaiser had no intention of honoring that 3-year promise at the time it was made.
So you'd have to demonstrate that they were being deliberately deceptive from the very beginning.
Exactly. And that's a much tougher burden of proof. You need strong evidence, something like internal memos, emails, something showing that Kaiser knew they weren't going to keep this promise when they made it. And the court was also worried about setting a precedent where any broken promise could be turned into a fraud claim.
Right, because then the statute of frauds wouldn't really mean much at all.
Exactly. So they said, look, there has to be a clear distinction. Breaking a promise, even a significant one, doesn't automatically equal fraud. There needs to be more to it than that.
Now, our research also mentions California Labor Code sections 970 through 973. These laws are specifically designed to protect employees from being lured into relocating for a job based on false promises.
Right. These sections basically say you can't lie to someone about the kind of work, the length of the work, the pay, just to get them to move. It's meant to prevent those beat and switch situations.
So why didn't these sections provide any help for Munoz, given that he did relocate based on Kaiser's promise?
Well, the court looked at the specifics of the situation, and they concluded that Munoz's move to Southern California, it seemed to be motivated more by his general desire to work in that area. He had connections there, wanted to be in that region. It wasn't solely based on a misrepresentation about the nature of the job itself.
So the court drew a line between a promise about the length of employment, which is what the 3-year training promise was, and a misrepresentation about the core aspects of the job, like the skills needed, the duties, the working conditions. Those are the things those labor code sections are really focused on.
Exactly. And the court also emphasized, again, that these labor code sections shouldn't be used to completely sidestep the statute of frauds. That requirement of a written agreement It's still a foundational principle in these kinds of cases.
So even though Munoz relied on Kaiser's promise when he moved, it wasn't seen as the kind of deception that those labor code sections were meant to address. It keeps going back to that lack of a written contract.
It does, and I think that's the biggest takeaway from Munoz. The statute of frauds, it's a real tangible barrier. If you have a long-term employment agreement, especially one that's going to last more than a year, get it in writing.
Absolutely. Don't just rely on a handshake or a verbal promise, no matter how genuine it seems at the time.
Right. And if you're studying law, if you're thinking about a career in this field, this case is a perfect example of why those seemingly dry technical concepts, like the statute of frauds and estoppel, they have real-world consequences. They can determine the outcome of a case, someone's livelihood, their entire future.
It really highlights how crucial it is to understand those nuances, how they can impact people's lives.
Definitely.
So to sum it all up, Munoz v. Kaiser Steel, it really drives home the importance of the statute of frauds when it comes to enforcing oral contracts, especially in employment situations.
And it shows how difficult it is to overcome that statute, even in situations where there's a clear sense of injustice, like Munoz experienced.
Right. And I think it leaves us with a thought-provoking question, something for our listeners to consider. We all encounter verbal promises, assurances, in our professional lives. How much weight do we give them? How much security do we place in a handshake deal?
That's a great point. And after diving deep into Munoz, I think it's wise to proceed with a healthy dose of caution.
Absolutely. Get those important agreements in writing. Don't leave your future hanging on a verbal thread.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, this has been a really insightful look at Munoz v. Kaiser Steel. Thanks for breaking it down with us.
My pleasure. Always happy to dig into these cases.
And for all of our listeners out there, keep exploring, keep learning, and we'll see you on the next Deep Dive.